is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
10 days ago, Austin Matthews was tied for 21st in goals in the NHL. He was 11 goals behind first place Leon Draisaitl. Well, this morning, he's tied for third and only 4 goals back of first place. What a run for Austin Matthews, and what a run for the Toronto Maple Leafs, beating the Columbus Blue Jackets 5-4 last night. And it's 34 who continues to just put up crazy numbers. Now a 7-game goal streak for the sniper, one of the best, if not the best, goal scorers in the National Hockey League. Welcome into First Up on this Wednesday morning. I'm Aaron Korolnik. He's Carlo Koliakovo. And Coco, man, this guy just continues to put up goals. It is crazy to watch.
There's a 7-game goal scoring streak right now for Austin Matthews. And
yes, sir.
Remember, Austin Matthews didn't have a training camp, right? He didn't play the first 3 games of the season, and you can see he's finally starting to hit his stride now. And the wrist is feeling good.
Is he ever?
The confidence is riding high. The goal scoring feeling is back. And, you know, as much of a gap that we thought other players in the league, like Draisaitl and Ovechkin, created with him, this is who this guy is. This guy is a very streaky scorer. When he scores in bunches, and when he scores a lot. know, it's pretty amazing what he's able to do. But look, I mean, he's playing on a team with really good players. He's playing on a team that's expected to score a lot of goals, and he's the guy leading the way in both of those conversations. So, you know, Draisaitl, everybody thought, oh, 82 and 82. Well, that's he's slowed
cold.
Down a little bit.
He's cold now. No points last night for Draisaitl again. The Oilers losing 4-1. McDavid did put up an assist, but yeah, Draisaitl's been stuck at 21 for, I don't know, a little bit more than a week now, right?
Yeah. And Ovechkin, man, this guy is unbelievable. I still can't believe we touched on him on the Ottawa broadcast the other night because of the 750 he scored over the weekend. But He's the year he's having right now. He's got 20 goals and he's got 41 points. So 20 goals, 21 assists. He's 2 behind the league lead in points behind McDavid and Draisaitl. He's 36 years old, and people marvel at what he's doing right now. But people don't understand. He's doing this without Nicholas Backstrom. Okay, his Robin that he's basically played beside his whole career at center ice. So as good as he's been, could you imagine when Nicholas Backstrom comes back?
True, but I think you could also say, at least for the last 3 games, that Austin Matthews has been racking up goals without Mitch Marner. And
Oh, no. I'm not trying to take away the attention from Matthews, because Matthews deserves every bit of
Ovechkin's amazing
attention. But well, I'm marveled at what Ovechkin is continuing to do at age 36.
Well, the craziest thing about Ovechkin, and if you look at, you know, historically speaking, at least over the last 5 years, he's not a big point producer. He scores a ton of goals, but doesn't rack up points.
No.
This year, for whatever reason, the assists are pouring in unlike ever before. I mean, he is still third in league scoring, just 2 points behind McDavid and Draisaitl, who now lead the Art Ross race in a tie for first at 43. But yeah, it's crazy to consider what Ovechkin's doing. But I think, man, Matthews, he's on pace for 57 goals all of a sudden. Uh-huh. Just a prolific run from 34 now, and I don't think it's slowing down anytime soon.
This would be a good poll question to put up, is if you had to place a bet today on December 8th, holy crap, we're December 8th already? It was just December 1st last week.
Yes, it was.
This is insane. It's going to be like Christmas next week. It's crazy how time's flying.
Yeah.
If you had to place a wager today on who to win the Rocket Richard Trophy, who would you put your money on? And put the odds beside Draisaitl, Ovechkin, Matthews, or other. Because Draisaitl right now is at 21, Ovechkin's at 20, Matthews is at 17, and we're seeing the heater that Matthews is on right now. But if you were to put money in, and would you have the odds in front of you of what they are?
Well, I know what they were a couple of days ago when I was talking to Duffy, and we were trying to figure out exactly how much to bet on Austin Matthews. Unfortunately for he and I, we did quite a work on that, a plus 700. So right now, Draisaitl is the favorite at a little bit less than 3-1.
Okay.
Ovechkin and Matthews tied at 5-1, and McDavid is 6-1.
Wow. That's great value right now for Matthews. 5-1?
Well, here's the thing about Draisaitl. If you look at Draisaitl, and we don't need to handicap this whole thing, a lot of power play production for Draisaitl, and that seems to be drying up a little bit for Edmonton of late, and that's no surprise. I mean, they can't operate at 40%+ all year. I think Matthews should be the betting favorite to win the Rocket. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, this is a little bit of recency bias here. When you put up the number of goals, what is it, 11 goals in his last 7 games, and he's just been unbelievable lately. Mm-hmm. Last night, he could have had a lot more than 2. There was a play when Wayne Simmons slid. He basically had
a backdoor.
Backdoor.
For the hat trick.
For the hat trick. And then he could have had an empty netter as well. There was a couple of opportunities as well. Could have easily been a 4 spot for Austin Matthews last
night. That was a 4-point swing for me in my fantasy league, because if you get a hat trick, it's 3 extra bonus points. So think about the goal that he would have got and the 3 extra bonus points.
And I wanted to bring that back because we did discuss at the beginning of the season, you had the first pick in the TSN fantasy pool.
Right.
And you took Matthews instead of McDavid. And you
I didn't have the first pick.
You had the second pick.
I passed on the first pick because I had the first overall pick the last 2 years in a row. And I was like, it didn't work out for me. And I just, I wanted to change things up. And I took Matthews as my second pick.
Over Draisaitl, which right now you'd probably rather have Draisaitl. A lot more points than Matthews.
No, well, not necessarily.
I mean, Draisaitl has already got 43 points and 21 goals. And we'll see how it all plays out. I don't think Matthews is going to rival Draisaitl in points. Like, I don't even think it'll be close. But, I mean, I think Matthews could absolutely rival him in goals. And he certainly has over the last couple of weeks. He has just been ridiculous. And the stat about the home performance, and I don't know what it is about Scotiabank Arena that Austin Matthews –
should call it the Drew Arena. Rename it the Drew Center or something like that.
Tim Biebs. I'm sure that's coming at some point in time.
Yeah.
In his last 83 home games, he has 72 goals. So I guess if you take away last night and last, 82 NHL regular season, you'd have 70, which is, completely unprecedented. I mean, Ovechkin, Stamkos, 60 goal scorers in the last 10, 15 years, but I mean, that's a Brett Hull, that's Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky territory. It is crazy how good of a goal scorer this guy is. And what you said about not having a preseason, having the wrist surgery, the slow start, I mean, he is ramping up and he's unstoppable. He's absolutely unstoppable. And like, think about his line mates last night. His line mates were Michael Bunting and Wayne Simmons.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's not exactly, Mitch Marner, generally speaking, on the right side of Austin Matthews. So when the Leafs do get Marner back, which seems like it'll actually be 3 to 4 weeks, he's got a shoulder injury that he suffered in practice a couple of days ago, which is not good news for Austin Matthews and his goal production. But at the same time, does not look to be affecting him in the slightest. Matthews has 4 goals in his last 3 games. And man, he is just a treat to watch night after night. And
so, Do you know the video clip from the movie The Mighty Ducks when Adam Banks, who hurts his wrist and then is at center ice, he's about to take a penalty shot, and there's that scene of him with the stick in his hand, he's looking at his wrist and turning it over like this? That should be Matthews' goal celebration after every time he scores. It's just like, score your goal and then look at your wrist and be like, this thing seems to be working. It's like Rookie of the Year where the guy breaks his arm and he's got this...
Yeah, cannon.
Cannon.
Coming out of the right field from
what did they do
Chicago.
In this surgery?
Yeah, whatever it is, it's remarkable. And the mustache is gone. I mean, with the mustache, without the mustache, that guy is just on a ridiculous run right now.
Well, that's another good thing, man. That guy's playing lighter right now. No mustache on his lip.
That's right. It looks like it's coming. It's growing back in ever so slightly. And another guy who got on the score sheet last night was Nick Ritchie. And that was his 27th game of the season, one of the big free agent acquisitions from Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and this guy was snake bitten, right? It was ugly. He was much maligned in the media. I'm sure it was weighing on him. And Sheldon Keefe addressed Nick Ritchie's 20 fingers. Let's cue up the clip here. So on Nick Ritchie, Listen, I'm sure you've been on teams over the course of your career, Coco, where guys have been in long droughts and it's weighing on them, and you can just tell day to day, I need to score, I need to score. And finally, for Nick Ritchie, he did, and his teammates were so thrilled for him. And here's what Sheldon Keefe had to say about that.
Loved it. I mean, it's obviously been a long time coming, but I said to him on the bench that I can't take a lot of credit for it because I've been calling it for quite a while now that tonight's going to be the night. However, I did feel strongly that today was going to be the day for him. He's very quietly playing well here. I think coming into tonight, I think he had 4 points in the last five games. So you can just see it coming. He's had some really good chances. Thrilled for him, and the team was thrilled for him as well.
Can you think of a specific example over the course of your career and a similar instance where a dude was just really struggling to, deal with
Matt Molson in Buffalo, the year that I played there? I think it was like the first 25, 26 games he didn't score, and he got demoted to the fourth line. And then when he scored, it was like a big celebration because this guy was getting paid $5.5 million a year to score goals and wasn't scoring. Right.
Tavares bump for Matt Molson.
Pretty much.
Moved over to Buffalo, right?
I mean, pretty
much. A lot
much.
Of guys have experienced that. Yeah, that's, I'm sure the Leafs were popping bottles last night. Nick Ritchie must go home, sit down in his condo or his house, and just be like, thank God this is over. I've
so
got one.
That actually happened to me like 2 years in a row, where my first year in 2015, when I played in Philly, I was a very popular locker room guy, and obviously I didn't play much because I signed there in beginning of November as a guy just waiting for a contract because I had plans to go play in Europe, and the contract in Europe was taking forever to transpire, and I finally said, screw it, I need to get back to playing. And Philly called and signed me, and I went in right away, and I went 2 months without playing a game, and I went 2 months of every day getting bag skated by the devil, Ian LaPerriere, who's an amazing guy. Like, he's an amazing guy. Like, I hate talking bad about him, but he's the devil because this guy never gave me a break any day. And so the guys would see me come in after practices and stuff, and I'd be laying on the floor and trying to catch my breath and asking for Gatorades just to replenish. And so that for the most part, like, guys were feeling bad that I was getting like punished for not playing. And I never complained about it, never did anything. But when I played, guys were always cheering for me to do well because they wanted me to stay in the lineup and they wanted me to produce because I was an amazing practice player that year. Like, just sniping every time. I remember, God bless his soul, Ray Emery, we were doing a drill once, and it was one of my favorite drills because the like, it would be like a neutral zone regroup. You pass it to the two forwards. Forwards go into the zone. One of them button hooks up the wall and hits you as the late guy. So you're 1-on-0 with the goalie. And I'd try to go cheese every time. And I would selly hard, too. I remember it was a bad day for Razor. He just didn't want to be in the net. And I went in and I just buried it right over his glove side, top shelf. Like, he went barring in. And I sellied in the corner and he fired a puck at me. And I was like, oh boy, this is a mistake.
You don't want to piss that guy off.
And I went over and afterwards I said, look, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you. He goes, don't ever celebrate like that when you score on me ever again. I was like, all right, man, yeah, sure. My apologies. It's just like, I'm just trying to have fun in practice. This is the only thing I have games situated. I went 24 games without scoring a goal. And literally, I was hitting posts. I was missing breakaway. I was missing backdoors. I was like snake bitten. My first goal as a Philadelphia Flyer was in Pittsburgh. It was a 4-1 game. Vinny LeCavalier rifles it off the goalie, and I'm skating back door. It bounces right to me, and I one-time it in the net. But as I one-time it in the net, Blake Como, who's the guy covering me, tries to slash my stick and actually slashes me in the face. So I shoot the puck, and I don't even see it go in because I drop my gloves, and I grab my hand, and I cover my face. I literally thought he knocked my teeth out. So I'm in the corner, covering my mouth, trying to figure out what just happened, and the boys are all jumping on top of me like, yeah, you finally did it. You finally did it. And I'm looking up, and I'm like, what did I do? Did it go in? He's like, yeah, you scored. I was like, oh, yes, I scored, but I couldn't celebrate the way that I wanted to celebrate because I got slashed in the face.
How bad was the slash? Like, were you bleeding or what was going on?
No, it didn't cut me, but I literally, the next day, my whole right side was swollen because I developed like a huge bump.
Yeah.
In on the side of my face. So that was a pretty cool moment of like the relief of me scoring my first goal because then I went on a heater. I scored the next game. There was only three games left in the season. So I scored the next game and then I fired one off the crossbar in the last game of the season against Ottawa. And it was the game Ottawa needed to win to clinch a playoff spot that year with the Hamburglar. So the following year in Buffalo, same thing. Like, I was a July 1st signing in Buffalo and thinking that, okay, Buffalo wants to sign me. I'm going to go there. I'm going to play in the top four. Two games into the season, they bring up a young guy, and they're like, we're going to play him over you. I'm like, what the hell's going on here, man? Why can't I catch a break? So I went through and played the same role in Buffalo as an extra guy, you know, fill in when I need to fill in. The one thing that I never wanted to finish a season with was a zero in the goal column beside my name. So we're getting into March now, and I still have a zero in my name. But I'm playing, like, really well. Like, I'm generating a lot of chances. I'm getting good chances. Like, my Corsi, you talk about analytics, was, like, probably one of the best on our team.
You're like Bobby Orr, of course.
And it didn't matter. Like, now, back in the day when I played, analytics didn't matter. But now it's all people talk about is analytics. And it was a game in March against Carolina. And you can see the goal. I think I tweeted it out the other day. Somebody asked me about that goal because it was an anniversary of the Sabres beating the Carolina Hurricanes. And my partner was Mark Pisick. He passed the puck over to me, and I literally put my head down and just buried it, top cheese, over the goalie's glove. It was Cam Ward in net. And I remember Rob Ray was the color guy doing the game, and he's like, and finally, Carlo Koliakov scores. You don't understand. This guy's a locker room favorite. The boys love him. The bench was going crazy. And I was finally like, yes, I finally got the monkey off my back. I finally scored. The stupid coach, Dan Bylsma, thought it was a good idea to healthy scratch me the game after. And I'm like, really? I just scored my first goal, man. Like, can you not let me try to build some momentum? Clueless, absolutely clueless about the whole situation because they signed a kid out of college and decided that, this is how we basically got him to sign. We promised we were going to play him. I said, why are you taking me out? Like, come on. Took me out. I played one more game the rest of the year. It was the last game of the season that I played with 10 games left, and I couldn't even build off of that. But you talk about, like, two moments that put me in the same position that Nick Ritchie was in last night. You talk about, like, your teammates cheering for you, the finally getting the monkey off your back. I just hope for Nick Ritchie's sake that this is something that will bring on more goals for him because Leafs are going to need him to start producing now with Marner in the lineup.
Yeah, well, the floodgates hopefully will open for Nick Ritchie. It's funny how that works, but not only in professional sports, I mean, in certain walks of life, you know, if you're struggling in an aspect and, you know, one can kind of turn into many over the course of a period of time, if you know what I'm talking about. So, you know, all it takes is one, and then the floodgates can open. Hopefully for Nick Ritchie, that is the case. We'll play Bang or What on the other side with our producer, Arad. And Dave Poulin will join us for Leafs Breakfast at 7:45. A busy morning here on First Up. We continue here on TSN 1050.
Ready, set, react. It's Bang or What? Will this segment end with a
bang
or a
what?
Every Wednesday morning here on First Up, we play Bang or What? Some topics are laid out by our producer, Arad, and Coco and I. We decide, do we give it a bang or a what? Pretty simple premise. And let's welcome in a man who is anything but simple, our producer, Arad Osvandi. Go ahead, buddy.
Bang or what? Six games was too many for Jason Spezza.
What? You mean bang. You mean bang. He's saying it's too many.
Sorry, I forgot the
phrase poorly.
Yes, phrase poorly. Way too many for Jason Spezza. I was shocked when I saw this suspension come out and six was the number. I mean, you just go back in history, okay? Tom Wilson last year got suspended 7 games for burying Brandon Carlo's face into the glass. This is Tom Wilson we're talking about, okay? A guy who's considered a repeat offender. Brendan Lemieux got suspended 5 games for intentionally biting Brady Tkachuk. Jason Spezza, okay, I'm not defending the act because we've said it that it's something that deserves a suspension. But it was, I don't think it was intentional. It was a situation of circumstance where Spezza tried to make a hit, but the hit changed because of the position that Pionk put himself in by diving for the puck. So it ended up being a knee to the head. I'm sorry, a guy with 1,200 games played that has zero history of crossing any line in hockey got suspended like a repeat offender. And I don't see the precedence in that. And I don't know why the league tried to make an example out of him when it came to giving him his penalty.
Well, I think this whole situation changed when it was announced yesterday that Pionk was put on... Was he put on IR? I know he's
no,
out
concussion
for,
protocol.
He was in concussion protocol. So he is hurt. And I think that changed this equation.
Rasmus Sandin is hurt.
Yeah, and Rasmus Sandin, I think that played a role in Pionk getting 2 games. And I think the difference is that concussion, a knee to the head, knee on knee, I'm not excusing it. I think Pionk deserved the suspension he got. I think you could probably make an argument that he deserved more than just 2 games. I'm not going to say bang to this. Like, I don't think the suspension was necessarily appropriate as far as 6 games goes. But I do think what Spezza did was a mistake. And I understand the Leafs' argument that it was not kneeing. That was what the Leafs were arguing. Pionk was going down, and it was a couple of things that all kind of transpired really quickly. But Spezza's intent was to go in there and hit Pionk and hit him hard.
It's a game of contact. I don't understand
it is.
Why.
It is.
Why?
But it was
Spezza's intent. Okay, Spezza's intent should have been to go in and make contact. But the contact changed when Pionk put himself in a vulnerable position. And I'm not defending the knee to the head. That was accidental. I'm not saying, you can't sit here and say that Jason Spezza came off the bench and intentionally tried to hurt Neil Pionk. He doesn't have that in his blood.
I think
like, come on.
Had it that night. I think I agree that at least for the 1,200 previous games in the NHL, Spezza had never done anything like that, at least to my knowledge. But on that night, you saw him on the bench, man. That led
everybody
up
was yelling at the
well,
ref on the
Spezza
bench.
Spezza was really, really pissed.
Come
and then
on.
He makes a beeline for Pionk. I think Spezza deserved maybe 3 or 4 games. 6, I was really surprised by.
Isn't that what we're arguing here? It almost seemed like Mike Babcock decided to get hired by the Department of Player Safety. He's like, oh, Jason Spezza? Yeah, I heard what you did to me. I tried to kick you out of the league, so you know what? This is my chance to kick you out of the league. I'm going to give you 6 games. That was a Mike Babcock suspension.
It could have been. We'll talk to Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst, during Leafs Breakfast. We'll get his thoughts on these.
I tweeted out a video yesterday of a similar hit that happened 2 years ago in the playoffs when Nikita Kucherov intentionally kneed, I can't remember the Columbus defenseman's name, kneed him in the head on the boards in a game that they were trailing. So clearly his intent was more. Got 1 game. 1 game.
It's the playoffs.
And they give Spezza
right?
6.
It always
Come
changes
on.
Based on when it is and where it is. And I think that would be an example. You're right, though. There's a lot of precedent when it comes to kneeing. And the Spezza suspension was a significant one. I think we can all agree. And I was very surprised. I thought it would be 4, personally. To see 6, definitely a little bit of a shock. What's next, Rod?
With the news that the Indiana Pacers are going towards a rebuild and are looking to trade Sabonis or Miles Turner, bang or what, the Raptors should go after Domantas Sabonis.
Bang. Absolute bang. I mean, you've seen Sabonis play. This guy is great on the boards. He's great in the paint. He's a great facilitator with the ball. I mean, there's a lot of things he does well, and I think he would fit perfectly for the way that he plays defense and, you know, just who he is as a player, what he can do offensively with this Raptors group. I would love this move if the Raptors went after and found a way to get Sabonis.
I think the only way you're going to get Sabonis is if you trade Pascal Siakam for him.
Really?
Oh, Sabonis is a stud. Absolute stud. Yeah, for sure. Would that be a move the Raptors would be willing to make? I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's a fair swap for both sides, really.
I don't think that's a Pascal Siakam move. Maybe we can ask
Javon Shepard. What would you expect the Raptors to give up for a double-double machine?
I would expect that they'd want a big man back, for sure. Maybe a Chris Boucher. Maybe a Kem Birch. I don't know. Like
No.
And hold on a second. And you'd have to include
10 firsts,
some...
like.
Not 10 firsts. We're talking about Sabonis
here.
Like,
Boucher is literally worthless.
They're going through a rebuild, so they want younger players. So
Boucher's like 28.
Okay. He's still a prospect, is he not?
I don't think so. I don't think that's even remote. I think you're going to have to give up Siakam for Sabonis straight up.
Wow.
For sure.
Siakam for Sabonis.
Which is why I don't necessarily see the Raptors making that move. Yes, or Rod?
I don't think it will take Siakam. I think Precious Achiuwa plus a younger player like Malachi Flynn plus a first rounder.
Let's
not forget, rebuilding NBA teams, they're not looking for another 28-year-old star like Siakam. I think the first rounder is way more valuable to them than Siakam. I mean, we've seen these trades before.
I agree with Arad. I agree with Arad.
I'm telling you, boys, you guys are way off. I'm telling
you. No, you're way off.
No, Sabonis is a
Arad is the
really
man.
Good player.
No, Arad's all over this one.
Come on.
Sausage fingers. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so, boys. What's next, Arad?
Ryan Clark had some very interesting comments about Bill Belichick. Let's give it a listen, Christopher.
You know what it is? It's that Bill Belichick is the GOAT. Bill Belichick is the greatest of all time. That he understands how to build football teams in his likeness and image. You know the only other person they talked about building things in his likeness and image?
Yeah.
It was in the Bible. It was God.
So wow. Bang or what? Ryan Clark calling Bill Belichick G-O-D.
Comparing him to God.
I'm going to take a pass on this one, man.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a stretch from Ryan Clark. Listen, Bill Belichick's the greatest football coach of all time. He's a football coach. Let's relax on the comparisons to God, I would say.
He's a god in the football world, but not a god in real life. Let's be honest.
I tend to agree. Absolutely.
And AK, I just got a text message saying that tell AK to get his head out of his ass again, because mm-hmm. you're wrong
Because I'm wrong, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's that text
Good.
Message?
For? Nice, Arad. I'll take Arad straight.
Yeah, Malachi Flynn. Arad will not be a Raptors analyst on our station anytime soon if he thinks Malachi Flynn has any type of value.
Hey, man, go back and look at all the NBA trade deadlines. A lot of these deals with these rebuilding teams is more about
like who did Vucevic get traded for last year?
Exactly.
Vucevic didn't get traded for a Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put Vucevic in the same conversation as Sabonis?
Well, I would, but Vucevic is a different circumstance with Orlando being traded to...
Orlando was rebuilding, which is what Indiana's doing.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, they're not going to trade Domantas Sabonis, a guy who's 2010 machine, for... What did you say? Boucher or Birch or Precious?
I don't know. They're going to want a center back, which, again, I forgot Achiuwa was one of those players. Achiuwa? Maybe Achiuwa. I mean, the Raptors got Achiuwa for Kyle Lowry in a trade.
Yeah, in a deal where Kyle Lowry was already walking out the door.
You're saying that Pascal Siakam has to be the main piece going
if
back
I'm
in
Indiana,
a Sabonis trade.
I wouldn't consider anything else except for Pascal Siakam. I'd take Van Fleet, although they already have Brogdon there already. But, yeah, I don't see it happening, to quote us, brother. And whoever texted you that, tell them to text me and we can take it off the air. Because my head is firmly outside of my ass right now. It is seeing clear, vivid thoughts. And I think the Raptors should absolutely consider trading Siakam.
Achiuwa, Flynn, and a first-round pick. Make the deal.
Yeah, look at 20 Fingers right now. He's going to puke. 20 Fingers is the voice of reason on this show. And I think he's on to something.
Throw Zvi Mihailuk in there, too.
Ooh, well, we can't trade Zvi. Come on.
No,
man.
He's our boy.
The Musketeers need to remain forever. Dave Poulin, our hockey analyst, will join us. We'll talk about the Spezza suspension. We'll talk about the Trevor Zegras play last night. One of the craziest, most unique goals you will ever see. Zegras making a strong case for the Calder Trophy early this season. We'll get into all that with Poulin next on First Up. TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin excuse me, will join us at 7:45 in about 5 minutes. We'll talk about last night's Leaf game, a 5-4 win for the Leafs over the Columbus Blue Jackets. The absolute tear that Auston Matthews has been on of late, and a report out of Insider Trading about Lawrence Gilman, someone who has been instrumental in building this current Maple Leafs team. He is a salary cap maestro. Apparently could be in the mix for the general manager job with the Vancouver Canucks. So that would be not ideal for the Maple Leafs. We've heard Kyle Dubas so many times talk about the importance of Lawrence Gilman and what he represents for the Maple Leafs organization. So that's an interesting one. We'll ask Dave Poole and his thoughts on that. And Nick Ritchie finally gets on the board for the Leafs. So a lot of great hockey content on the way with our hockey analyst Dave Poole next on Leafs Breakfast.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
Pass ahead for Bunting. Bunting driving the net. In front of the net, they score! What a glorious play! And Austin Matthews does the finish. But it's Michael Bunting with the creativity for a 2-0 lead.
What a night at Scotiabank Arena. The Toronto Maple Leafs beat the Blue Jackets 5-4. Austin Matthews with two more tucks. Nick Ritchie got on the board. And the Leafs, Coco, dealing with a lot of injuries. Of course, you know, Mitch Marner's out. We know Rasmus Sandin and Travis Dermott are out. We know Jason Spezza was suspended for 6 games. And certainly we'll get into that with our next guest. But a couple of NHL debuts, Christian Rubens and Alex Steeves, who I understand as a Notre Dame alum, had a poster of our next guest up in his dorm room. TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin with us here on First Up. Dave, can you confirm that?
Not unless he was on the Goldbergs. It's the only one that I know that's up in anywhere that gets a lot of airtime. So I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure Alex Steeves, at his age, would quite be old enough to remember Dave Poulin, the player.
He's Carl, a big fan.
I
heard in the post game.
He'd have to be a big fan of the stories he heard on campus, not of the player himself.
Oh, so. Are we talking about on the ice stories, Dave, or off the ice stories?
Always on the ice, Aaron. Yeah, always on the ice.
Yeah. So let's start with Matthews, and we heard the clip. Michael Bunting setting up Matthews for that unbelievable goal last night. Michael Bunting has been a revelation so far, especially since being put up on that top line alongside Matthews. But 17 on the season for Matthews, scoring at a 57-goal pace. He is on fire. And we were debating earlier in the show, if you had to label someone as the front runner to win the Rocket Richard Trophy, is it Austin Matthews right now?
Well, he'd certainly be in the conversation, and it would be a very tight conversation. I mean, he is just on fire right now. He certainly has the capability, and you know, it looked like a while ago Leon Draisaitl was a slam dunk, right? And that was just arguably 2 weeks ago. But the way Matthews is scoring right now, and, I mean, he's doing it right now without Mitch Marner, but Bunting has been an interesting addition to this hockey team because Michael Bunting, you know, so little was known about him. He only played 26 games in the National Hockey League coming in, and he was 26 years old. And he's fit really well, but he's fit up and down the lineup. And the thing I give him credit for is he hasn't changed how he's played regardless of how he's been used. He's been on the fourth line. He's been on the third line. He's been on the second line. He's been on the first line. He just kind of plays the same way. But he's getting a better sense for Matthews' spacing. And that play last night, most guys give that to Matthews earlier when he's in the slot and covered. Because when Matthews is on the ice, he commands the puck. When you're on the ice with a guy like that, you think you have to give it to him all the time, and you have to give it to him all the time. It's demand and command, and when a player like that is on the ice. And yet he held it for that split second and put it where Matthews is going. And so if you've added another dimension of passing, you know Mitch Marner's tremendous passing ability to Austin Matthews. You know Matthews' ability to create shots for himself and shoot from further out. And we've watched him develop even a tighter game this year where he scored a lot of goals from it close. Now you got another element in Bunting who is passing the puck to places where Matthews can go get it. So, yeah, I don't know. How do you rule out Alexander Ovechkin, Leon Draisaitl, Matthews? I mean, I think those, you've got to have Connor McDavid in the conversation, but in a very small handful, he could very well be the favorite this morning.
Yeah, I think the value, I think we said 5-1. I mean, how can you not take that right now with how hot he's been.
It always turns to that, doesn't it, Carl?
Well, it's true.
That's how we operate.
The conversation goes.
I mean, Dave, there were a lot of people last night who were on the Leafs minus a goal and a half on the puck line, right? And when Max Domi scores with, like, what, 0.2 seconds left, there were a lot of people who raised up their arms in frustration and disbelief. But, I mean.
Well, I would tell you, Aaron, there were a lot of nights when I would walk in my own locker room, and I played for really good teams, and I've told you guys this before, and I'd walk into my own locker room, and I'd look around, and I go, I'd never bet on this group.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've been betting on the Leafs in the last month, you've been doing very well for yourself. And I don't know how many people were betting on Nick Ritchie to score his first goal 27 games into the season, but it finally happened for him last night, Dave, and clearly a huge relief. His teammates were just so excited for him, and rightfully so. It's been a struggle for Ritchie. Carlo was telling us earlier about times when he was playing with Philly and Buffalo where he was on goalless streaks and kind of how that built up and the frustration of that. Any memories that you can conjure up from your playing career with similar instances? I know you were a prolific goal scorer in your time, Dave, but I'm sure there were some slumps along the way.
Yeah, I do think of one time, and it was my rookie year, and Bobby Clark had taken me aside at one point. He was still playing, and he said, you have to score goals in this league. You just can't be a good player. You have to score goals. So think about that pressure when a Hall of Famer tells you that. And I had locked in, I had a really good start to the year, and I'd locked in at 12 goals. Not that this is clear in my memory or anything, yeah, Aaron, as you asked this question, but I was locked in at 12 goals, and it was January 21st. And I went to get my hair cut, and I'd always parted my hair in the middle at that point. And I made a decision.
You were a middle part guy? Wow.
Carlo, different day and age, right? Different day and age. So I was a middle part guy in college, and I went in, and I said to the barber, I need something different. And he parted on the side on a Friday. It was January 20th. I believe the 21st, the next day, was an NBC Saturday afternoon game against the New York Islanders, who were, you know, in the middle of their four-cup run. I had a hat trick on Billy Smith the next afternoon. So I had 12 goals in late January and finished with 31.
Oh,
just went on
wow.
A ridiculous, ridiculous tear. And obviously still, you may not know this, but I still part my hair on the side. So
I'm going to get a haircut after the show, Dave.
I think you've got to contribute to the change. You've got to change things you do, change the way you drive to the rink. You know, I, like everybody else, has been in goal scoring slumps. And, you know, as long as you're getting the chances, but keep changing little details in your life, and you never know what's going to do it, Aaron. You never know.
Yeah, you just never know. I mean, look at Austin Matthews. Shaves his mustache, and now he's on an incredible goal-scoring streak.
Okay,
so
is he going to grow that back? Or?
I was going to say, I don't know. Are we going to see it back? I mean, who knows?
It's,
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't
goals
right
in
now.
The last seven games, guys.
No kidding. No kidding.
And just on fuego.
He sure is. Just quickly, it was obviously brought up on the broadcast yesterday, but you know, with the news of Marner now missing an extended period of time, I think it caught a lot of us by surprise, the fact that it's a 3 to 4 week injury. Where do you expect this team to go in his absence right now? Like, who's a guy that you're looking at to step up his game or fill the void? I mean, obviously Austin Matthews has got to do his thing, but is it William Nylander? Is it Bunting? Is it Kasha? Is it Nick Ritchie? I mean, who do you think is a guy that we should, you know, highlight even more right now with Mitch Marner out of the lineup?
I think it's all of the above. And if it continues with Matthews, so be it. You know, he'd be the one you would think would be the most affected by the loss of Marner, because he's, you know, assisted on so many of his goals as a primary assist. But it's got to be the all of the above. It's got to be the power play as well. And, you know, Kasha is one that you look at and say he's most capable as a right shot with his skill level. His confidence level is growing. You know, it was fun to watch how excited he was when Nick Ritchie scored last night. And you always look for that. And so I think it's a little bit of everybody. I don't think one guy does it for Marner. And, you know, you'll see different people step up on different nights. It's got to be by balance. And that'll all be good in the long run, too, coming back. You know, for everybody to know, I don't think there's one guy that's going to step into that role and going to stay there for 3 or 4 weeks at right wing on that line. You know, I think they'll continue to move things around and try different things.
Dave, when Jason Spezza, it was announced yesterday during the broadcast on TSN that he would get 6 games, I think a lot of people were surprised by that. Maybe we shouldn't have been, considering the in-person hearing, but six games, considering Jason Spezza's sparkling resume as far as player safety goes. I was surprised. I'm not saying it's the wrong decision, but I was definitely surprised. How did you see it?
I was surprised as well, and yet not, because the longer it went yesterday, as we get into it, you know, we're waiting, okay, are we going to get the news by the time we get our Sports Center hit? No. Are we going to get it for the, you know, the first intermission? Like, we're evaluating what the timing is. And I turned to Dregs at one point and I said, this is going to be longer than we thought, because they're putting that much time and detail into it. And don't forget, you think of the detail that went into that decision, and listening to that, that's maybe the most detailed report that I've ever heard from the NHL, because they normally don't go into what the defending team's defense was.
Yeah, no kidding. Detail.
I've never heard that. And so, okay, here a couple things, guys. The people get angry at us because we talk about it on air. Like, they get really angry at you. Like you had something to do with the decision because you're explaining the decision. That's all we do, is explain the decision. And people get really angry and say, okay, well, put it on, you know, if you did this, if you said a player on Winnipeg, if you said DeMello was the one that got hurt, not Sandin, if he was hit by Brody, you know, not Pionk, and if Paul Stastny did what Jason Spezza did, those would be similar types of players. Like, if Paul Stastny did it at this point in his career, you'd say the same thing about him that you would about Jason Spezza. And it were six games. No, you know, nobody in Toronto would even blink at that. But because it's your player, no matter what city it's in, because it's your player, then the Department of Player Safety is wrong, has to be wrong. And that's just human nature. I mean, that's what people do. But their detail in the way they went through it, I mean, don't forget, they're handing that decision down, and they know that the team they're handing it to, well, one of their executives used to do that job. I think Brent Shanahan was the head of Department of Player Safety. I mean, he used to do the job. He sat in the same room and made the same decisions with some of those same people. So think about that. And they would have listened to his exact reasoning when he was going through individual suspensions over the years. Mm-hmm. And so that's a different angle on it. But, you know, certainly Spezza is not a dirty player. I mean, at all. But that play in an isolated incident, you know, in their mind, merited six games. And Carl, I heard you speak earlier about Brendan Lemieux and it only getting five games. I thought that would get 10 games.
Right.
That's what I said on that hockey, because it's totally not a non-hockey play.
And it's intentional. There's intent there.
And if you want to eliminate it, if you want to totally eliminate it happening in the future, then eliminate it. And, you know, no one's even going to think about doing it again. So, you know, I know it's a tough job in Department of Player Safety. Anytime they make a decision, there is an irate group on either side. There just is. That's the nature of that position. That's why it's so hard to do. But if you put different, you know, different colored sweaters on the players in that instance, it would be the exact opposite argument. It is six surprised, I think, everybody. Everybody involved, including us sitting at that desk last night.
Yeah, and after what you just said, I'm convinced even more right now with you saying that Brendan Shanahan, you know, knew, was used to working there and maybe had an idea how this was going to play out. I'm convinced even more right now that Mike Babcock was the guy that handed out the decision to suspend Jason Spezza yesterday.
He's working with the Department of Player Safety now?
That's right.
That is in Saskatchewan.
He's a
consultant because they knew his the way he felt about Jason Spezza. Some other news around the league last night. Now news, some highlights, and man, what a highlight it was, because he broke the – basically broke social media with the move that he made. And Trevor Zegras, man, the flip behind the net. I mean, we know about the Michigan goal where guys flip it up on their stick and they wrap it in up top, but the move, the creativity this guy showed yesterday just to flip it up and Milano bats it in out of the air, top shelf. I mean, it definitely gave you the wow sort of feeling, did it not? And
it was like spectacular, Carlo, but I'd seen it before, and I thought, when I played in Europe in the early 80s, and there was a kid on Malmo, I played for Rögle in Sweden, and there was a kid on Malmo who probably tried it a half a dozen times against us. And because there was so much space behind the net,
Yes, you're right.
There was much more room. And he used to try it quite frequently, and I never saw it work, but he used to try it. And that play last night, though, was just – I mean, it was remarkable because Milano clearly played decoy on it. He didn't raise his stick. He knew exactly what was going on. Wow. He knew exactly what Zegras was going to do. They talked about it for sure. Because the minute he picks that puck up, you think he's coming around and going to try the lacrosse goal. And so, you know, everybody thinks that because they've seen that tried so many times, and that's become so routine. But just the creativity, you know, the Makar end-to-end rush the night before. Some of the young talent.
Makar. Ridiculous. Jeez.
Oh, that had to remind you of yourself in Bantam. I mean, it had to.
Like, in Bantam, for sure, yes. I was the end-to-end guy all the time.
Right.
Always.
You know, you might have done it once in Midget, but in Bantam, that was you. And it just, you know, some of the young talent and some of the stuff we're seeing. But Trevor Zegras is a very, very confident young man. And I love the creativity. I love where he's going with it. And wait till Mason McTavish joins him, guys, from Peterborough, because he's got a brash attitude as well that, you know, that Duck fans are going to love. And they've got a young group coming, Jamie Drysdale as well. They're going to be a handful when all those kids get together, and it's going to be fun to watch. But really, to watch that last night, to watch the creativity and the skill level of that play is just really fun.
Yeah, Zegras is an outstanding playmaker. We talk about Matthews being potentially the favorite to win the Rocket Richard. I think it's fair to say that Trevor Zegras is the favorite to win the Calder Trophy at this very moment. Dave, I know we're up against
Aaron,
the clock.
We get to watch those kids. Like, I do the U18s, rather. So I've been watching Trevor Zegras now for probably 3 or 4 years. And so we thought he was one of the best passers we'd ever seen at each level. So this isn't something that just came on the scene.
No, we remember him playing for the American team in the World Juniors last year, how outstanding he was. Quickly, the story out of insider trading about Lawrence Gilman, who's a very, very important part of the Maple Leafs front office, how he's being considered in Vancouver, perhaps other places for the general manager role. What would that mean to the Leafs if they were indeed to lose him, Dave?
Well, it'd be a big loss for sure, because he's part of the management group, the management discussion group. I mean, Brandon Pridham's their cap guy. I know Lawrence is a support guy in the cap role, but, you know, he's a well-respected veteran. He's, you know, really, I think, well-versed across the board, not just in one specific part of hockey management. A long history in Vancouver, so that doesn't surprise me there. What does surprise me is there's four teams in the NHL without general managers right now. That's amazing. I'm not sure that's ever happened during a season where there's been four teams sitting without a GM, let alone the coaches that aren't fully in place. So, you know, that's unique. But I mean, there's obviously a large management group here, and Lawrence has been a big part of it, particularly with the Marlies most recently, and with what they've done, and they've had to be called upon to supply players. And we've watched Sandin and Liljegren come up. We've watched Steve's last night. Watch Rubens last night, who looked fine, by the way, Carlo. I'll defer to you a little bit on the defense, but he looked fine to me last night in his first game ever in the NHL.
Yeah, he's a big quiet's always a good thing in your first NHL game.
It is, absolutely. Quiet is good.
Dave, thanks so much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a great day. Thanks.
That's Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst. Yeah, Rubens, a big, big man. I believe he's Latvian. 6'5", 230. And
is
I thought
he Latvian?
Acquitted himself.
I thought I he believe. Was, is he, no, I don't think he's Latvian. Oh, man, what's the country that I'm thinking of? Go ahead, I'll find it.
I'm going to look as well. Well, this is great radio. He is indeed Latvian.
Oh, he is.
I know my Latvian hockey players. If there's one thing I know on this in this world, Coco.
He was one of those guys that was one of the three players named to the Latvian Olympic team, was he not?
Oof, if so, that's tough sledding for the Latvians. The Leafs' eighth defenseman is one of your top three guys. Could be a tough tournament for them if indeed they head over to Beijing for the Olympics. But yeah, he's a big boy. He's going to get an opportunity over the next couple of weeks with Travis Dermott injured, with Rasmus Sandin injured. The Leafs are, you know, they're light on the defensive side because of injuries, and the same would apply to their forward group right now with Jason Spezza suspended.
Yeah,
for
he was one of the guys
games.
Named. He was one
who
of the
else?
Three
who
players.
Who else is on the – who are the other two?
Gergensens.
Oh, okay. Zemnis.
And Merzlikins.
Okay. Oh, so it was Latvia on Latvia last night with Merzlikins and Net for Columbus. And
yeah.
Colombia, Latvia. it's going to be a good squad, the Latvians. Maybe we could find a futures bet on Latvia to win the Olympics, led by Christian Rubens.
Christian Rubens, buddy. Yeah, Gergensens and Merzlikens. So, yeah.
I guess every Latvian last name ends with an S.
And wasn't Bob Hartley the last coach of Team Latvia at the World Championships, I believe?
That is something I cannot answer.
Yeah.
But I will do my best to ascertain.
Only on First Up do you get Team Latvia hot take talk.
Definitely. Yes. Lots of hot takes on Team Latvia. Speaking of hot takes, we were talking about Domantas Sabonis and the report from Sham Serenia that he could be very much available from the Indiana Pacers and what it would cost the Toronto Raptors in order to acquire them. We'll have Bruce Arthur join us in about 20 minutes. We'll get into that with Brucey, one of our favorites from the Toronto Star, and also the Lou Marsh Award being voted on today. And it's an Olympic year, right? So Generally speaking, whenever it is an Olympic year, an Olympian wins the Lou Marsh, except if there's exceptional circumstances. And I would argue that perhaps this year there are indeed exceptional circumstances, with one Toronto Blue Jay having an all-time season, winning the Hank Aaron Award as the top hitter in baseball. Of course, I'm talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That's right. He is eligible to win. Should he win? We'll get into that amongst many other things in Hour 3 of First Up.